across the Pacifica network and over 50 community stations around the country, this is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, October 23, 2002. I'm Deepa Fernandez. The Pentagon is releasing prisoners held on Guantanamo Base in Cuba. Across the country, people came out yesterday to highlight the continuing and intensifying police brutality. And the only progressive shortwave bandwidth in the world is threatened with closure. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. While the five permanent and most powerful members of the United Nations Security Council negotiate behind closed doors, the 10 rotating members wonder why they have been left out of the discussions. Heather Risby reports from the UN.
Frustration is running high among the 10 elected members of the Security Council. Yesterday, the U.S. draft that declares Iraq in material breach of its disarmament obligations and set out tougher rules for weapons inspections was widely distributed to the media, but the 10 elected members say they are still waiting to receive the text officially. And commenting on the closed-door consultations, Mikhail Wahbi, the Syrian ambassador, said, "I don't like this method." Leaving the 10 elected members out of the discussions, he said, is not a democratic way. This is not a good way to bring peace and security to the world. The five permanent veto-holding members are the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Russia, and China. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Heather Rizvi at the United Nations.
The people of Iraq are still celebrating the release of loved ones from prison and eagerly watching the events at the UN. Free Speech Radio News correspondent Jeremy Scahill had this to report from Baghdad.
Well, people here, to be quite honest, are still full of jubilation over the release of these prisoners, and very few people are asking why Iraqi President Saddam Hussein did it. They're just enjoying the fact that it happened. It really was an extraordinary scene to see thousands and thousands of people let out of prison. It must be stated that there are still some people who have yet to be released, and there was a minor demonstration yesterday in front of the Ministry of Information, people wanting to know the whereabouts of their loved ones. And this comes at a time when a lot is happening in New York at the United Nations, and Iraqis are following very, very closely what's happening. And the sense here on the ground is that the United States floated a draft resolution at the UN that had among its tenets the right for the United States to send in its own armed forces, essentially, to accompany weapons inspectors, as well as a private team from America that could consist essentially of spies, and that they would be mandated to have free and unrestricted access throughout the country. Now what we're seeing at the United Nations is the United States backing off from some of the most obnoxious components of the Security Council resolution under the guise of negotiating with France and Russia. So the sense here is very much that the United States has very cleverly and effectively fooled the international community into believing that it's negotiating a resolution which the Iraqis say still remains as an occupation agreement.
That was Free Speech Radio News correspondent Jeremy Scahill in Baghdad. One of Turkey's top officials is seeking to outlaw the political party expected to win control of the government in the upcoming elections because he believes they're too Muslim. Nicholas Birch reports from Istanbul.
With just 10 days to go before general elections, Turkey's fearsome chief prosecutor, Sabi Kanadolu, called this afternoon for the closure of the party almost certain to head the country's next government. His accusations of bureaucratic mismanagement fooled no one. The real issue is that AK Party's leaders are Muslim and proud of it, a fact which, for Turkey's ultra-secularist establishment, amounts to a crime. Since 1997, when the army pushed out a prime minister they suspected of Islamism, any link between religion and politics has been ruthlessly stamped out. Most Turks believe AK Party's protests that it represents no danger to democracy. Not the state, though. Only 2 weeks ago, it banned the party's charismatic leader from standing in elections. Now, it seems as though it may go all the way. Nicholas Birch, Free Speech Radio News, Istanbul.
The CIA is expanding its domestic profile in the FBI terrorism task forces throughout the country. Gareth Schweitzer reports from D.C.
The CIA is assigning more agents to work with regional FBI terrorism task forces in an attempt to improve communication between the two agencies. After 1973, the CIA's domestic spying operations were drastically curtailed, and the FBI has supposedly been more careful in accepting information from the CIA that it is not legally allowed to use and sometimes even possess. Michael Ratner of the Center for Constitutional Rights believes that an expansion of the CIA's domestic role threatens civil liberties.
CIA is not trained in law, and therefore letting them loose on the American people poses the grave risk that our constitutional rights will not be safe.
Most law enforcement and intelligence officials applaud the CIA's expansion, believing that information about suspected foreigners and terrorist organizations will now flow more freely between the two agencies. In Washington, D.C., for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gareth Schweitzer.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
The Pentagon has announced that some terror suspects held in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba will be released. Classified by the United States as quote-unquote illegal combatants, 598 men representing 42 countries are incarcerated at Guantanamo's Camp Delta. From Miami, Shannon Novak reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Guantanamo. May we ask that you please remain seated until the captain has turned off the seatbelt sign.
When I arrived in Guantanamo Bay, it was without the sensory deprivation the detainees show up with. Off mic, one U.S. soldier appropriately summed Gitmo up by saying, "This place is a hellhole." Yesterday, the Pentagon announced that it will be releasing an undisclosed number of classified illegal combatants. A small number of detainees at an undisclosed time will be boarding a flight out. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
I don't know that I even bothered to look at what the nationality of these folks are, but there are a small number that have now been moved through that process and are either, I've said that's fine with me, and there's kind of an interagency process so that the people who look at law enforcement and intelligence all have a chance to chop on it. But whether it's actually happened yet or not, I don't know. But it's true that process is working and that there are some people likely to come out the other end of the chute.
According to officials, until now, only two prisoners have been transferred out of Guantanamo Bay, one who was mentally ill and one American who was moved to the States for continued detention. Again, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
We certainly would either hand them to a government's control or we would have talked to the government and the government have advised us that they did not need to have control, in which case they would be free.
The Department of Defense has not released the nationalities of the detainees to be released. There are prisoners at Guantanamo from 42 countries, including about 100 from Saudi Arabia, 58 from Pakistan, and 12 from Kuwait. The Kuwaiti's families filed a federal lawsuit in July. They claim that the men were in Afghanistan working for charitable organizations. The case was dismissed. Lawyers have asked for another hearing before the U.S. District Court of Appeals. Arguments are set for December 2nd. The United States is anticipating Kuwait's support if the U.S. goes to war against Iraq. Officials say that they fear al-Qaeda will track down anyone who is released and try to obtain information from them on things like U.S. interrogation methods, security procedures, details about other detainees, and weaknesses in the security at Guantanamo. Again, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
We have captured, a couple of handfuls, and we've killed a couple of handfuls, and there are still more than a couple of handfuls of relatively senior people out there that we don't know if they're dead or if they're injured or if they're functioning. We have learned a lot from the folks that we've scooped up, and we are still learning from them.
Meanwhile, former Brigadier General Rick Backus, who recently stepped down from overseeing the Guantanamo base, has been removed from his command at the Rhode Island National Guard. There are unconfirmed reports that Backus had philosophical differences with those who interrogated detainees. And the search for a missing Guantanamo Bay soldier has been abandoned. Staff Sergeant Ryan Foraker of Logan, Ohio, has been missing since September 24th. The Navy says that they believe that he has drowned. His wife, Angela Foraker, told the Miami Herald that she didn't buy a word of it. She said her husband didn't swim alone and was not depressed or suicidal, and according to Mrs. Foraker, would not have gone AWOL because he wouldn't have wanted to look like a coward to his two daughters, ages 3 and 14 months. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Shannon Novak, Miami.
Venezuela is in the throes of more internal unrest after weeks of protests both supporting and opposing President Hugo Chavez. This Monday, there was a big national strike, which analysts say was a definite vote against the president. In April this year, Chavez was abducted from his office and removed from power for 48 hours. Edmundo Bracho, editor of Tal Cual newspaper in Caracas, says this latest unrest was aimed at getting the military to side with Chavez's opponents.
Last night, 14 dissident officers rose up against President Hugo Chavez and asked the Venezuelan leader to leave office. They did it through by way of television, and then they moved to the Plaza Altamira, the place where Chavez opponents usually gather. However, there were a few places in the country where the military also protested against Chavez, but there is very little indication that the officers' demands would force Chavez from office, really.
There was also major strikes that took place on Monday. Can you talk about those?
Well, against all odds, the strike was a sort of a success for the opposition, although the Chavez supporters denied it. It was roughly 85% of the total working forces went on strike Monday. The oil workers worked only for about half the regular period of time.
So where do you see the situation at right now? Where is Chavez's support? There have also been big rallies, both pro-Chavez and anti-Chavez. What's the balance right now?
The country, as well as the city, is sort of divided. It's zonified between opposition and pro-Chavez or Chavez supporters. For instance, the place where the presidential palace is, that is in Miraflores in Caracas, it has plenty of Chavez backers. They took the streets around that area yesterday as soon as they heard that 14 dissident officers demanded President Chavez to withdraw from power. And just 2 kilometers away in the Plaza Altamira, to the eastern part of the city, there was a rally of the opposition. So you see this sort of pattern repeated throughout the cities and the towns of the country.
After the April coup, which removed Chavez for about 48 hours, we heard from Chavez that he was going to be a little more moderate and try and bring the opposition in more. Has he taken any concrete steps over the last few months?
No, I think that now he has a golden chance because the Secretary General of the OAS, that is Cesar Gaviria, should visit the country next week, and this is an excellent opportunity for Chavez and for his supporters to summon the opposition to a dialogue. I think what really remains now is for both parties to sit down and talk so that the situation doesn't continue decomposing. Otherwise, you could say we're on the verge of a civil war.
And has there been any rumors of another coup that might occur?
Well, yes, the dissident officers that spoke yesterday at Plaza Altamira in Caracas said they were talking to obtain a way out of the crisis by constitutional and institutional means. However, we do have information that there are few propositions for military coups already underway. They're just waiting, perhaps, for the next march, for the next general strike from the opposition.
Do you think that they're having any contact with the United States? Will they be supporting this opposition right now?
I don't think so, for one very practical and pragmatic reason, and that is the Middle East and the Iraqi conflict and the oil situation. I think the relationship between Hugo Chavez and President Bush will depend a great deal about the outcome of the relationship between Washington and Baghdad, considering that Venezuela is one of the main oil suppliers for the USA.
Edmundo Bracho, editor of Tal Cual newspaper in Caracas. Yesterday was a national day of action against police brutality. We begin our coverage on the streets of New York City, where hundreds of people gathered to send a clear message to law enforcement officials of their city.
have a dream.
Are we angry yet? Yeah! Say it out loud. Yeah! No more police brutality. Yeah! No more police brutality. Yeah! Say it out loud to all the police officers who have surrounded us here as loud and clear. No more police brutality.
Sisters and brothers, it is very important that we are out here today together with people in cities all across the country, from here out to San Francisco, LA, and Seattle. It is important because the U.S. rulers are today unleashing a juggernaut of war and repression on us and on the world. And in the face of all that, it is crucial that we step up the fight to stop police brutality.
My poor little children, one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Say no more!
No more!
How would you feel if your 13-year-old son was killed by a police officer?
Angry! Mary!
I can't hear you.
Angry!
That happened to one of the parents who's here with us tonight, Mr. Nicholas Hayward. His son, Nicholas Hayward Jr., was killed by a police officer of the New York City Police Department, of course.
Police brutality has a whole another element that we don't get to hear about or talk about. Especially post 9/11, it has affected the Arab, Muslim, and South Asian community.
In the last year, we've seen the scope of the police spread even farther than it was before September 11th. We've seen them start to criminalize and target whole new communities of people in this country. Today, it's Arabs and South Asians. Tomorrow, it's Latino immigrants. The next day, it's Haitian immigrants.
No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
Thank you. It's good to see a crowd out here today on October 22nd's National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality, the repression and the criminalization of a generation, which is what's going on here in New York City and around the world. Nicholas Jr. was only 13 years old when he was gunned down by a New York City police officer in September 1994.
I have a dream.
Residents of Houston, Texas, find themselves ranked number one in the country in civilian deaths by police. At least 30 documented cases of people killed by local law enforcement since September 11, 2001 exist, more than any other metropolitan area in the country. Houstonians marked the National Day of Protest with a demonstration in front of the city's downtown police headquarters. From Pacifica Station KPFT, Renee Feltz reports.
150 people dressed in black gathered to break through the climate of fear generated here by a high rate of deaths at the hands of local law enforcement.
Being in Houston, you know, just hear different stories or whatever, and they just start to accumulate.
Just at home, you got people right down the street from you where they're being, you know, shot and killed, and it's not fair.
The standard practice in Houston is for these deaths to go unpunished. At a recent town hall meeting called by the NAACP, LULAC, and ACLU, police officers were supposed to address citizen concerns about police accountability in cases involving excessive use of force. But family members of victims of police violence, like Arlene Kelly, who attended the meeting, left unsatisfied.
Our district attorney admitted at the recent town hall meeting that in 27 years as a DA, he had only asked a grand jury one time to indict a cop. One time in more than 1,300 shootings.
Some of the worst violence against residents of Houston has been carried out by officers serving the city's large Mexican-American and immigrant population. As bystanders waited at a bus stop next to the demonstration, their reactions to the protest against police brutality reflected an awareness of how immigrants to this country are treated by local law enforcement.
Está bien.
It's good, because there is a lot of injustice for people who are illegal that come to this country. There's a lot of injustice that's done to them. One of the worst acts of violence by local federal law enforcement officials against immigrants occurred a year and a half ago when longtime Houston resident Serafine Olvera was killed during an undercover INS raid in Bryan, Texas. Olvera's wife, Socorro, attended the demonstration.
They got into his house, they started beating him up, they tied him from his hands and from his legs, and one of them, Richard Gonzalez, he started to jump on Serafine's neck until he broke his neck. Okay, he got paralyzed. Okay, after he got paralyzed, he would drag it from inside the house all the way to the front where they have the vans. Okay, they have unmarked vans because they were under kind of undercover. And then one of them, Henry Gonzalez, okay, when Serafine was dying on the floor of the bus, he came out with pepper spray, and he sprayed on his all over his body.
The INS originally claimed Olvera suffered his paralyzing injuries during a work-related leg injury suffered days before the raid. But a medical examiner found that he had become quadriplegic when a severe blow to his neck damaged his spinal cord. The same day, 140-pound Olvera was apprehended by three INS agents. The roughly 20 men who lived with him in the raided house were deported to Mexico and told never to return. It wasn't until Olvera's brother, Galejo, gathered their testimonies and presented them to U.S. agents that the incident was investigated. All three officers have now been charged with violating the federal civil rights code. Their trial is being held in the Southern Texas Federal Court in Houston. Some demonstrators linked the protest against police brutality to the fact that Harris County still leads the nation in sending men to the state's death row. October 22nd Coalition member Toylene Johnson noted the conditions on the row are just as bad as the incidents of excessive police force in the streets.
How many people saw the tapes of the last two or three days of Gary Graham's life? 6 to 8 huge men in riot gear, beating and manhandling one lone defenseless black man.
The city's police department officially stated they had no reaction to the demonstration. Meanwhile, a newly formed chapter of Cop Watch, a nonviolent citizens group working to help end police misconduct through direct observation in the streets, is beginning patrols with video cameras and notepads. I'm Renee Feltz in Houston, Texas, for Free Speech Radio News.
Last week, the University for Peace, a United Nations project located in Costa Rica, cut off Radio for Peace International's high-speed internet connection and disconnected phone lines, ceasing the station's ability to broadcast programs like Democracy Now!, Free Speech Radio News, and Counterspin. Radio for Peace International, the only shortwave radio station dedicated to promoting peace, has been receiving increasing hostility from the university. In July, the station received an official eviction notice. Pauline Bartolone reports.
Radio for Peace International is the only station on the shortwave band that broadcasts messages combating racism and promoting peace worldwide, 24 hours a day from Costa Rica.
Están escuchando Radio para la Paz Internacional en Costa Rica.
What I want to change in Costa Rica is to the poor people to not be poor. I mean, that's so sad to see those people poor.
You are listening to Radio for Peace International, broadcasting peace, love, unity, and respect around the world.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Far Right Radio Review. I'm your host, James Latham.
James Latham is the co-founder of Radio for Peace International and is on the forefront of a legal battle to keep the station in its current location, on the campus of the University for Peace. The founder of the United Nations Project, Rodrigo Carrasco, invited Latham to build the station on their land in 1987, and now a new administration is trying to evict the station. James Latham says they never received official reason for the eviction.
In terms of what they have told us, why, they haven't said any reason outwardly to us. You know, they haven't gone out and said, we want you to move because of this. But we suspect the reasons that they're asking us to move have to deal with these connections that Maurice Strong has on these large corporations. And the fact that the radio station has broadcast the continuing struggle of and reports from the anti-globalist movement that is going on worldwide.
The eviction notice is only the latest of 2 years of harassment by the university administration led by Maurice Strong. Strong serves as the president of the university council, as well as on the board of the World Economic Forum, numerous corporations, and was the special advisor to the president of the World Bank. Dean of the university, Gudmundur Ericsson, comments on the relationship with Radio for Peace.
We haven't had that close a relationship over the years. They've been going their own way and we've been going our own way. And now we are, as I said, reassessing all our relationships, including the one with Radio for Peace. It seems to me, or it seems to us, that they are now trying to go on their own. Well, we wish them the best of luck, of course.
Latham also says that the university has recently held gatherings of the School of America's alumni and is now being guarded by armed men in the country without an army. RFPI supporters believe that the hostility from the university is a form of censorship of media that is not provided elsewhere. Chuck Scorch, longtime RFPI listener.
It's very important for Radio for Peace International to be a source and keep transmitting because there are voices out there in the world that aren't heard anywhere except on a few stations in the United States. Voices like Chomsky or Greg Palast, Arundhati Roy. Shortwave radio is available for anybody all over the world. I think they can be heard in about 120 countries. And it's a remarkable source that anyone, even who doesn't have much money, can hear voices that you can't hear anywhere else.
It's going to people who have no other access to information about crucial issues that affect their lives. If this station goes off the air, they're not going to have that medium. They're not going to have a way to get that information.
Gene Parker is an RFPI board member and producer of Disability Radio Worldwide. RFPI and supporters are organizing to fundraise $3,500 for the needed equipment to broadcast all programming and are also seeking additional funds to enable them to operate independently from the university. Gene Parker is still confident the station will not be pushed off their land.
As the name Radio for Peace International suggests, we are opposed to hostile acts, even if they're in our own backyard. And so we will continue to broadcast.
I'm Pauline Bartolone, reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
Please help support Radio for Peace International in their struggle to continue broadcasting free speech radio news and promote peace worldwide over the airwaves. You can send checks to Radio for Peace International, Box 1094, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Or for more information, email info@rfpi.org. Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York and KPFA in Berkeley and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Katta Mesta with production assistance from Scott Gurian. Headlines editor is Randy Zimmerman and Jade Paget-Seekins is our technical producer. We have technical assistance from Pauline Bartolone, web support from Vanessa Tate, and our interns are Rosalind Fay, Susan Chelli, Fernando Romero, Christopher Martinez and William Perdomo. I'm Deepa Fernandez.